The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. So today we're diving into something that feels, well, incredibly relevant. Pandemics. We've been looking at Christian Dalu McMillan's book, Pandemics, a very short introduction. And I have to say, this book really shifted my perspective. I think, like maybe a lot of people, I mostly thought pandemics were, you know, about finding a vaccine, maybe some public health messages. Yeah. But McMillan really pushes back on that. His big idea, and it's powerful, is that pandemics aren't just medical crises. They're, what does he call them, biosocial phenomena.
Exactly. Biosocial. And that's such a critical distinction, isn't it? Because sure, the microbe, the virus, whatever it is that's the necessary cause, it has to be there.
Mm-hmm. The trigger.
The trigger, yeah. But it's the human factors, politics, trade, inequality, culture. Those are the sufficient causes. That's what lets a local bug go global. It puts a responsibility much more on us.
It really does.
So our goal here really is to tackle what McMillan calls historical amnesia. It's this tendency societies have to just forget the lessons from past outbreaks, even the really painful ones.
It's like we hit reset after every crisis.
We do. So by looking back at these patterns, the successes, which are few, sadly, and the failures, we can hopefully see what actually works, what doesn't, and maybe how to face the next threat more effectively, and importantly, more equitably.
It's kind of shocking to realize this whole cycle has just played out over and over.
It really has.
Hmm.
Okay, so who's our guide on this journey through history? That's Christian W. McMillan. He's a historian specializing in medicine and disease, a professor of history at the University of Virginia. And what makes his view so valuable is that he's not just looking at the science, the virology. As a historian, he steps back. He looks at the big picture, the long term, the human context.
The societal structures.
Exactly. The structures, the political choices that quite literally create the pathways for disease to spread.
Yeah, and that historical lens is so crucial. It means you stop seeing pathogens as just like tiny biological things. They become historical actors.
Right. They shape empires. They deepen divides. They force social change. McMillan's really good at connecting the dots, you know, from the Black Death way back in the 14th century right up to HIV/AIDS in our lifetime.
Showing the same underlying social issues are still there.
Tragically, yes. The core lessons seem timeless.
Okay, so let's talk about the book itself. Pandemics, a very short introduction. The title says it all, really. It's meant to be concise, accessible for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
The aim seems to be to, well, demystify pandemics a bit, take away some of the fear by showing they're not these totally random bolts from the blue. They're actually a recurring feature of civilization, maybe even predictable in a way.
Yeah, predictable in the sense that the conditions that allow them are often things we create or ignore. So the book starts with the groundwork, right?
Yeah.
Defining terms, epidemic versus pandemic.
Big difference there. Local versus global.
Crucial difference. And he introduces that key concept, zoonosis.
Ah, yes, the animal connection. Diseases jumping from animals to humans.
Exactly. And he stresses that this isn't some rare thing. Most of the new infectious diseases we're worried about now, HIV, coronaviruses, many flus, they're zoonotic.
Which immediately links it to human behavior, doesn't it? Like cutting down forests.
Precisely. Habitat destruction, climate change, it brings us into closer contact with animal reservoirs. It's a direct line.
Okay, so after the basics, he moves through history.
Yeah, kind of chronologically, looking at major case studies. He connects the biology, you know, bacteria acting differently than viruses, to how human civilization itself helped diseases spread. Things like farming, cities, global trade.
They all co-evolved in a way.
They did. And the focus keeps coming back to the social consequences. Stigma, blame, government responses, good and bad, and how public health slowly, sometimes painfully, emerged as a field.
So it's this whole ecosystem view.
Completely.
Mm-hmm.
And his conclusion from that is pretty clear. The solutions aren't just in a lab. They need social justice, international cooperation, strong public systems. It's as much about that as it is about vaccines.
Okay, let's dive into some of those historical cases. This is where the patterns really jump out, starting with the big ones. Plague and smallpox.
Right, the archetypes. Plague, caused by Yersinia pestis, that bacterium.
Yeah.
It's the classic example of a disease following human pathways.
You mean like trade routes?
Exactly. The Silk Road, for instance. These networks we built for commerce became superhighways for the plague.
And the Black Death in the 14th century, the impact was just immense, wasn't it?
Terrifying. We're talking mortality rates of 30, maybe 50% in parts of Europe.
Yeah.
It massively disrupted society, definitely weakened the feudal system because suddenly labor was scarce.
But it also had that darker side.
Oh, absolutely. It set this awful precedent for scapegoating. Fear and lack of understanding led to horrific persecution, especially Jewish communities who were falsely blamed, a pattern we unfortunately see repeated.
So if plague shows that fragility, what about smallpox? You said it's a story of extremes.
It really is. In the Americas, smallpox was devastating.
Yeah.
It acted almost like a biological weapon for European empires.
Because the indigenous populations had no prior exposure.
None at all. This is what's called a virgin soil epidemic. Zero immunity in the population. The virus just tore through communities. Mm-hmm. Estimates are up to 90% mortality in some areas.
Yeah.
It undeniably paved the way for conquest.
Just catastrophic.
Unimaginably so. But then, smallpox gives us the flip side. Humanity's single greatest public health victory.
Vaccination.
Starting with Edward Jenner's work in the late 1700s, yeah.
Yeah.
And culminating in that massive, coordinated global effort by the World Health Organization.
And smallpox was eradicated, completely gone.
Completely eradicated worldwide by 1980. It shows what's possible when science and global cooperation truly align. It's the peak achievement.
Wow. From agent of empire to total eradication. That's quite a story.
It is. But then we get to cholera in the 19th century, and it sort of brings us back down to earth. If smallpox shows the best possible outcome, cholera reveals the dangers of neglecting the basics.
The basics being?
Sanitation, infrastructure. Cholera, a bacterial infection, really took off with modernity, with the Industrial Revolution, and rapid, unplanned urbanization. Cities grew incredibly fast, but sanitation systems couldn't keep up.
Creating perfect conditions for a waterborne disease.
Exactly. And this brings us to probably the most famous story in public health history. John Snow in London, 1854.
Ah, the Broad Street Pump.
That's the one. He did what Macmillan calls shoe leather epidemiology. Just fantastic. He literally walked the streets, mapped where people were getting sick, interviewed families.
And traced it all back to one specific water pump.
One pump handle. It was groundbreaking because the dominant theory at the time was miasma, that disease came from bad air, foul smells, maybe even moral failings.
Right, not from contaminated water.
Snow's work fundamentally challenged that. It proved that preventing disease required concrete, physical interventions like clean water, sewage systems. It really laid the foundation for modern public health.
Okay, so that's bacteria. What about viruses? Influenza comes next, right? The 1918 pandemic.
Yes, the so-called Spanish flu, though it didn't start in Spain. Still the deadliest single pandemic event we know of. The estimates are just mind-boggling. 50 to 100 million deaths globally.
More than World War I itself.
Way more. And Macmillan emphasizes how the war created the perfect conditions for it to spread and be so lethal. You had massive troop movements, soldiers crammed into barracks and trenches, poor nutrition.
And censorship, right. Governments didn't want bad news spreading during wartime.
Exactly. News of the outbreak was suppressed, especially in warring countries. Spain was neutral, so its newspapers reported freely, which is how it unfairly got the name. It was this lethal combination of a novel, virulent virus, and unprecedented global movement and disruption. A chilling preview, really, of how fast respiratory viruses could travel in a connected world.
Moving into the more recent past, the book tackles HIV/AIDS. How does that fit the pattern?
Well, it fits the biosocial model perfectly, but in a different way. It was a slower-moving crisis compared to the 1918 flu, but Macmillan shows how social prejudice and political inaction were just as deadly, if not more so, than the virus itself.
You mean because of who it affected initially?
Largely, yes.
Yeah.
The fact that it disproportionately hit marginalized groups, gay men, intravenous drug users, hemophiliacs, Haitians, initially led to horrific stigma and, crucially, a devastating delay in meaningful government response, particularly in the U.S. under Reagan.
So the failure wasn't scientific at first. It was social and political.
Absolutely. The ignorance, the fear, the lack of funding, it allowed the virus to become deeply entrenched. It's a really painful example of how societal attitudes can worsen a health crisis.
But there was pushback, right? Activism.
Oh, incredible activism. Mm-hmm. Groups like ACTUP, the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power, were fierce. They used direct action, protest, incredibly smart media tactics to force the issue.
They demanded attention, research funding, faster drug approval.
Exactly. They literally changed how drug trials were conducted and how patients were involved. The development of life-saving antiretroviral therapies happened much faster because of that intense pressure from affected communities. It's a story of terrible neglect, but also amazing resilience.
And looking forward, the final chapters address future threats.
Yeah, Chapter 7 looks at new and future threats. And the assessment is pretty sobering. McMillan argues that the things driving the emergence of new diseases are actually accelerating.
Like what?
Primarily deforestation and habitat destruction. When we cut down forests, we push wildlife into closer contact with livestock and humans. This dramatically increases the chances of a virus-jumping species, that zoonotic leap.
So environmental destruction is a direct pandemic risk factor.
A huge one. Add climate change, which alters habitats and animal migration, plus the sheer speed and volume of global air travel. It creates a situation where a new pathogen can emerge and spread worldwide incredibly quickly.
That link between, say, cutting down a forest in one place and a potential outbreak in cities globally, that's something we don't always connect.
We often don't. But McMillan makes it clear, his conclusion isn't really if another pandemic will happen, it's when. The key isn't predicting the exact virus, but understanding these underlying drivers and remembering the lessons from history about how we respond or fail to respond.
Okay, so pulling it all together, if you look across all these examples, from plague to potential future threats, what are the big recurring messages McMillan wants us to take away?
Well, there are a few core themes that just keep showing up century after century. The first, and maybe the most important, is that pandemics are social amplifiers. They don't hit everyone equally. They always, always disproportionately harm the most vulnerable people in society.
So your outcome isn't just about your immune system. It's about your social position, your access to resources.
Absolutely. Think back to the 1918 flu. If you were wealthy, maybe you could leave the crowded city, isolate yourself in a big house, get private medical care, eat well.
But if you were poor, living in a crowded tenement, maybe needing to keep working despite being sick,
your risk was exponentially higher. Overcrowded housing, poor sanitation, lack of access to care, poor nutrition. These social factors were huge drivers of mortality. The virus exploited existing inequalities.
So inequality isn't just unfair, it's dangerous for public health.
Fundamentally, that's theme one. Theme two is the persistent failure of blame-based responses.
The scapegoating we talked about earlier.
Exactly. Finding someone to blame, a religious minority during the plague, foreigners, specific communities during HIV/AIDS, it's this knee-jerk reaction driven by fear. And McMillan shows it never helps control the disease. In fact, it actively hinders the response by creating division and stigma, making people afraid to seek help.
Plus, it causes immense additional harm.
Immense harm. And the third theme relates to that historical amnesia we mentioned. It's the cyclical nature of pandemic amnesia.
Meaning we forget the lessons once the crisis passes.
Precisely. We might invest heavily in public health infrastructure after a bad cholera outbreak, build sanitation systems, create health departments. But then, when the immediate threat fades, funding gets cut, preparedness wanes, and we become vulnerable all over again.
It's like we're constantly relearning the same lessons the hard way.
Depressingly often, yes.
The book seems full of these really concise, powerful ideas. Were there any particular lines or concepts that really stood out?
Definitely. McMillan has a way of summarizing complex ideas really effectively. One that captures the core argument is something like, a pathogen may be the trigger, but human society provides the fuel and the pathways for the fire.
That really shifts the focus, doesn't it? From the invader to the environment we've created.
Completely. It makes you see pandemics not as external attacks, but as events enabled by how we live, how we travel, how we structure society.
What else?
There's a critique of our usual response. The history of pandemic response is largely a history of missed opportunities to address the social conditions that make populations vulnerable in the first place.
So we're always reacting, putting out fires instead of building more fire-resistant structures.
Exactly. We focus on the emergency, the vaccine, the cure, rather than the long-term work of reducing the underlying vulnerabilities like poverty, poor housing, lack of healthcare access. It's a call for proactive, not just reactive, public health.
And maybe one more.
I think this one is really challenging for our individualistic times. Community resilience, not individual immunity, is the foundation of effective pandemic preparedness.
Okay, unpack that. It's not just about me getting my shot.
It's crucial, but it's not enough. McMillan argues real preparedness relies on social cohesion, trust in institutions, mutual aid, reliable information, strong public systems that support everyone, especially the vulnerable. Protecting yourself is important, but protecting the community is what ultimately contains an outbreak.
That really pushes back against just focusing on personal protection.
It does. It emphasizes the collective good.
So, thinking about all this history, What are the practical takeaways? What does this mean for us, you know, listening today?
Well, on a personal level, I think that history of scapegoating is a powerful warning. It should make us all more critical consumers of information, especially during a crisis.
Be wary of blame narratives.
Exactly. Ask, who benefits from pointing fingers? Is this narrative actually helping solve the problem, or is it just dividing people? Resisting that urge to blame and challenging misinformation when you see it, that's crucial in what people now call an infodemic.
Fighting the information virus as well as the biological one.
You got it. And then for policy, the lessons are stark. Cholera shows that investing in public health infrastructure, clean water, good sanitation, disease surveillance, accessible healthcare isn't just a cost. It's a fundamental investment in national security and economic stability.
It pays for itself in the long run by preventing crises.
Massively. And the lesson from HIV/AIDS is about prioritizing the vulnerable from the start. Ignoring marginalized groups doesn't contain a disease. It allows it to smolder and spread. Equity has to be central to any effective response.
And you mentioned the environmental link earlier.
Yes. That structural point is huge now. Protecting biodiversity, stopping deforestation. McMillan makes a strong case that this is no longer just environmental policy. It is long-term pandemic prevention. Public health and planetary health are intertwined.
That's a big shift in thinking.
It has to be.
Looking back on the book, what was the single biggest takeaway for you? The thing that maybe surprised you or stuck with you the most?
For me, it was really internalizing that idea that vulnerability is largely a social construct. It's not just about who is biologically weaker. It's about who society leaves exposed.
Through decisions about housing, jobs, healthcare access.
Exactly. How we build our cities, structure our economies, treat minorities and the poor.
Yeah.
These decisions directly shape who suffers most when a pandemic hits. Realizing the extent to which we choose our level of vulnerability as a society. That was quite profound. And sobering.
Yeah, sobering is the word. It puts the responsibility squarely back on us. What about you?
I think for me, the lasting insight is this powerful reminder that science is necessary, but it's not sufficient.
Yeah.
We can have the best vaccines, the most brilliant diagnostics.
And if there's no trust, if there's massive inequality, if communication fails,
then the tools don't work effectively. History shows that again and again. You need trust, equity, good communication, competent and compassionate governance to make the science actually save lives on a large scale. That holistic view, blending the history, the social science, and the biology, that's what makes McMillan's perspective so valuable, I think.
A really crucial perspective for our times.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.